Jets fans, it's Dr. Emma here with you to review round 8. We played at home against Perth Glory and we lost 2-0. With me to talk about this upsetting occurrence, I have two of our regulars with me tonight. First, I'll say hi to Bodes.
Hello, Emma. Good to see you getting a chance to host another pod.
Yeah, my first time doing a review, so hopefully I remember to do all the important things. And I also have with me Luke.
Hi, Emma. How are you? Welcome back to Australia.
Why, thank you. I wish I knew how to say that in Japanese, but I do not. I can say thank you and good morning. That's pretty much it. And my eyes are blue, but they are not, so that's pretty useless. Anywho, enough about me. We'll go straight to the opening question while I remember exactly what I'm trying to do here. Opening question, I think it was Dave who posed this one. Spoiler alert, if you're listening to this with your children, we may say something that may upset them in this opening question by accident. We're going to talk about Santa, not Brendan Santa Lab, the guy who wears red. So make sure your kids aren't listening in case we say something they don't want to hear. So the opening question is, which of the current squad players for the Newcastle Jets would you ask to play Santa Claus and why? Boats.
I am going to go with Ronnie Vargas, just purely because we're going to bring it back to football. He's always assisting his teammates, so I'd assume he would assist by handing out all the presents to everyone. So I'm going to go with Ronnie. Real boring answer, I know, but I'm happy with it.
That's a really sweet answer, Bodes. Unexpected. Lukey, what about
on
you?
On the fly,
is that so unexpected? Oh, poor Bodes. Me, I honestly, I would have said Dimmy for the exact same reason. So, yeah.
Wow, okay. That opening question was a bit of a flop.
Dave's going to be super impressed with our answers. He gave us like a full day to be ready for that as well.
I was expecting a bit more controversy, a bit more sass, you know, someone saying Hoffy because he's old now, or that's the kind of shit I was expecting. My pick was I'm going to go out of the men's and I'm going to go into the women's. And I'm going to say Stengel would be my pick to play Santa Claus because she would just have so much fun with that and it would be very Instagrammable.
She's got the jolly part down pat, so already. So that's, you know, just get her in the red suit and she's good to go.
Yeah, I think she'd enjoy it thoroughly. If you're listening, Katie, we'd love to see it. Well, that was a bit disappointing, but let us know, listeners, if you've got a better answer about who should be Santa Claus out of the current squad. Okay, well, moving on from that disappointment to another disappointment, let's talk about the match. I guess first I should do the highlights so that we all remember the misery that we are discussing.
No, please no.
Just the first 30 seconds will do.
Yeah, that would be nice, but no. So let's pause for a moment and go to the highlights thanks to Fox Sports.
Along to McDonald Jones Stadium. Talking of the air, there's a lot of rain in it. The storm cell that affected the Sydney Derby so badly last night has hit Newcastle. It's very wet, very grey. Umbrellas are the must-have accessory here this afternoon. Oh, got good contact. That's a mistake by Bogart. And Perth could be in at the other end. Keogh feeding Joel Chianese. It's Chianese. He's around Moss, but did he bring him down in the box? Penalty. Yep, Stephen Lucas points to the spot. What a crazy start to this game. We played less than a minute. Well, and as far as I'm aware, Kilkenny has never taken a penalty. That doesn't matter. Places it confidently in the corner. And Perth Glory lead by a goal to nil. Rajewski forward again. Oh, that's surely 1-1. No. Off the frame of the goal by Jair. Goodness me.
That was a brilliant header. He's so unlucky.
Jair, oh, it's a really smart save by Rennie. Must have seen that one late.
And it skids off the surface. It's a top save. And he does well to push it away, not in front of him. And Jair really looking in the mood.
And it comes from Kilkenny. Djulbic the target, who reaches it. And then Mertula, awkward for Moss, who spilled it. And it's two. It's Jason Davidson, who fires it into the roof of the net. And Perth Glory have doubled their advantage.
The set piece from Kilkenny. Mertula at the back wins the first header. They win the second header. And then the Newcastle defence just don't deal with it.
That's clever. Jason Hoffman, good save, Reddy again.
And it's a decent strike from Hoffman, and Reddy really has kept them in the game.
Dane Shepherds brings it down. Has he done too much? Georgievsky, side netting. Oh, it's only a sparse crowd inside McDonald Jones. They're the happiest bunch of fans inside the venue at the moment. Meantime, here's Hoffman.
That's not far away. It's a decent chance.
Perth got the goals that matter through Neil Kilkenny's penalty in just the first minute of the game, and then Jason Davidson's volley. And the Glory are back to the summit. Perth answer the challenge.
All right, well, that must have been difficult for everyone to listen to again. Sorry. So before we go into the specifics of this match, boys, as we said, very disappointing. Can I get maybe, before we go into the specifics, your overall feels about what happened in this game? Lukey, you want to go first?
It was frustrating. It was if anyone has ever played FIFA and has been, as the term is, FIFA'd, or whatever it is that the kids call it these days, where one team has a billion shots and the other team has like one and wins 1-0. Or 2-0 from one shot. This is the real life version of that. That's how I feel.
We was.
I hope you can tell I'm not happy.
Well, if you were happy, you'd be a little bit strange.
Yes, that would be strange. No, not happy.
Bodhi, what's your overall feels about the match?
So I like going to go like that same type of route. This is exactly how I think Barcelona feels when Inter did that job when Mourinho was the coach, where they just purely sat 11 man on the ball in the Camp Nou and just absolutely completed murder. It's just, yeah, 11 men behind the ball for 89 minutes and they've absolutely nailed it. So other than that, I thought we played awesome.
Yeah, I think...
Don't get me wrong. I think we played awesome, but we got no points. We didn't score a goal. That's the frustration there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's an awesome seg.
Out-coached us.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say
for the
is...
first time.
Who's the host here, boys? All these interruptions. Do I have a lag or something on my connection?
Oh, we're just going to go on all night. in typical male fashion.
What I was going to say is that was an excellent seg, but then you guys said four or five more things. Yeah, it's the one stat that matters that we didn't succeed in. So we didn't score any goals. But if you look at the stats, we had the most possession, somewhere between 55 and 59%, depending on which website you look at. We had higher success rate on duels. We had more intercepts. We had more passes. We had higher passing accuracy. We had more crosses. We had a stupid number of shots, more than 20 shots, five or six of them on target. But as Luke said, the only stat that matters is putting them in the back of the net, and we couldn't do that. So... looking at those stats, as you said, Bodhi, we did technically play quite well, except for in the part that matters, which I think makes it more frustrating. I think I've said before, watching shot after shot and not putting any of them away hurts more. I think we said on the group chat a couple of times, someone said it was beautiful attacking football, and I said, well, other than the bit where you actually score the goals. So what went wrong? How can we be having so many shots? How can we be having so much possession and still not put a single one of them away? I mean, Liam Reddy isn't that good, is he?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that Perth got that early goal. If they don't get that goal and go 1-0 up in the first 2 minutes, they don't sit back as much as they did. They had the goal. It was the same thing that Melbourne Victory did in the grand final. They got the goal and then just sat behind the ball for the rest of the game. If they don't get that goal and they don't score for a while, they've actually got to perform and play. I think for the most part, they just let us do their thing because they knew that we weren't going to threaten them too much. Yes, we hit the post through Jair, and yes, we had a ridiculous number of shots, but a lot of those shots were from distance and they weren't really too clear cut of a chance. There was a few that should have been scored, and I'm sure the players themselves will be having nightmares about how they didn't score them. Ronnie in particular with some of his skies, but I just think if that goal doesn't go in the second minute, Perth don't sit back and don't let us have that much possession or let us dominate the game from there.
All right, well, let's talk about that goal then, since it probably was the turning point, ironically the turning point that came from a penalty awarded in the first minute that was then scored in the third minute. We'll just back up a bit, though. Bodes, we had the first chance. We had a chance within, what, 30 seconds?
Yeah, it would have been, I think someone said it would have been the quickest goal in A-League history. It's just, I think I'd like literally just reshuffled my beer along the fence line where I was standing, and I look up and Jair is almost plotting one in the back of the net, and then 20 seconds later, boom, we've got a penalty against us. I would say it's the craziest start to an A-League game I've ever seen, if not like even seen on TV, the whole A-League in 13 odd seasons.
Yeah, it was a hectic minute. Very hectic minute. All those people who were late to see the start of the match were probably disappointed, because it was probably the most exciting minute of the entire game. I guess with that, the penalty, it started from a Boogs error way down the park, and Perth just got away with it. Topper Stanley, I think, gets in the way maybe of Moss, and Moss goes down, takes out Chianese, ends up being awarded as a pen. How did you guys see that? Do you agree on the pen? I know that a lot of the crowd were upset about it, but obviously that's what the crowd's going to say. Luke?
Do you want me to say this as a Jet supporter or as a football supporter?
Can I have both answers?
Okay, but it was a trick question. Both answers, it wasn't a penalty. Screw the VAR and the ref. It begins.
Bodie, how did you feel?
I thought it was a pen, but I'm all about Luke. I'm just going to get my popcorn.
Do you want to elaborate, Luke? Or?
It's the same thing that it is basically the exact same thing that happened in the World Cup in 2006. The bloke's on the ground. The guy runs over the top of him and drops his leg down. Like, what's he supposed to do? He's already on the ground and he runs over the top of him. Where else is he supposed to go? It's like the handball for Brisbane on Friday night. His hand's just there. Like, he hasn't done anything. It's just hit him. Like, what's he supposed to do? Where is it supposed to go? I don't understand.
These are questions I cannot answer for you, Lukey. What do you think about Topper Stanley coming across in front of Moss, though? Do you think that got in his way and he could have maybe collected it or shielded it better if that doesn't happen?
Maybe. Look, possibly. I think I'm just still pissed off. Hey, I think that's it.
Back to that familiar pain of being a Jets fan.
We had a good for a year.
Right. Well, obviously, once the penalty was awarded, it was going to be put away. Apparently, it was Kilkenny's first penalty, but pretty hard not to score a penalty. And Moss was probably pretty rattled after that situation. We soldiered on for a little while. 25th minute, I think it was, the second goal happens, which again, another early goal. Again, Moss involved there. And again, questions about the decision made. So the call that the commentators made when I was watching the highlight was, oh, Moss should have done better. Moss should have just cleared it away for a corner. He shouldn't have tried to catch it. He's spilt it. But then there's a lot of people saying that they think that Moss was fouled and that he was kept from the ball. So, Bodie, what do you think of that one?
I think Moss in a smarter situation. Look, I wouldn't say it was soaking wet, but obviously the field was greasy. The ball would have been greasy. I would have just punched it, and he could have been stronger. He's 35, 36 now. He should know better. But my issue with that whole goal is the foul that gets them the free kick. Bugard basically just absolutely bollocks Andy Key over when he really didn't have to, when he wasn't going anywhere. So my blame actually falls on Bugard before it falls on the Moss. It shouldn't have even got to that situation.
I absolutely agree with Bodes. There was one of those free kicks that you were just like, what the hell was that for? Like, why have you done this? There was absolutely no need for it. And honestly, at the time, I was just like, they're going to score from this. Like, if it wasn't the free kick directly, then it's going to lead to it. And sure enough, it led to it.
I'm going to go out of order on my notes since you guys have brought that up, Ben. It was a Boogs error that started the run for the first goal. It's a Boogs error that's led to the second goal. I personally thought Boogs looked very tired in this game. Maybe the conditions were getting to him. Maybe something else is going on. Did anyone else want to comment on his performance overall in this match?
all his football knowledge was in his hair before he cut it. That's what I'm putting it down to. That's my conspiracy theory.
He's like Samson of football.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought it definitely wasn't anywhere near what we've seen of him at his best. It was very uncharacteristic of him to have so many errors. Normally, you know, it's just the one or something, but there just seemed to be a lot. I think Andy Keogh just tortured him all game, but pretty much he just couldn't get a break from him, really. So I think he's probably a bit rattled from that. There could be something else that's happening, whether it was like the weather or the wetnesses, like the field, how it was holding up and everything. I don't know, but it definitely wasn't what we're used to from Boogs.
Yeah, I'll jump in and now give my actual response on now that I've thought about it. And we spoke about it today on the group chat.
I liked the sassy one.
Boogaard, he doesn't cope well with with when he plays against physical players like Andy Keogh now. Like and someone brought up that I'm really worried for when he plays Tonovi and what's going to happen with Boogaard as well. I think when Boogaard plays the little small strikers, like when Lafondre came out, I think Lafondre had his worst game because Boogaard just bullied him all game. And the fact Keogh stood up to him, I think Boogaard just can't cope with that physicality. That's what I put it down to. I don't know whether you guys think the same.
It looked like he was bullying him. Like Keogh was bullying him. Most of the game, he just looked like the small kid on the park that's just getting pushed around by the bigger kids. Like, that's what it looked. So I can definitely see, you know, there is some sort of substance to that because it looked very odd from the stands. How that combination was playing off during the game.
Yeah, and it's not like Boogaard's a small fella. He's 6'2". Like he's probably one of the biggest players in the team, like behind, I guess, Topper Stanley and Lachlan Jackson. Like he's a big fella.
So do you think that has a knock-on effect to the rest of the team then? If the captain is not coping with the pressure, do you think the rest of the team sees that and it filters down?
Yeah, definitely. Like you can imagine what the guys look when the guys look up front, looking back and seeing their captain getting pushed off the ball. It's like, come on, you're the one who's supposed to lead us here. I definitely think it has an impact.
I agree. I remember back in the 11-12 days, I think it was, the very first game of the season where we had signed Thiago Carvalho. It was probably the first 5 minutes of the game that he's gone down for something really, really, really weak, really. And, you know, you just sort of thought, okay, this is one of your senior centre-backs here who's gone down over nothing and is rolling around. Like, that doesn't give you much confidence at all. And if as Bode said, you're looking behind you and your captain, your leader from the back is getting bullied, he's getting pushed around, it just sort of has a flow-on effect to the rest of the team, I think.
All right, so I want to talk sub-strategy next. And so I'm going to open with, do you think it would have made things better or worse than if Boogs had have been subbed?
I think by this point, Perth were already 2-0 in front already. And it stepped back a further 10 metres, so I'm going to say it wouldn't have gotten any worse.
I don't think it probably would have gotten any worse either. I think the damage was done at that point. If Boogs comes off, then whoever goes in centre-back there, Keogh's done his job. He's rattled the team. He's thrown the team off. We would have to try and pick up the scraps, and I don't think at that stage, being 2-0 down, we're going to do that at all.
All right, well, let's talk about the subs that did happen rather than my hypothetical ones then. Very early sub, Ivan Vuitsa taken off at 37 minutes and Hoffi on. How did you guys see that? Bodes, you want to go first?
Now, I don't mind that we've done a sub in the first half for tactical reasons. I completely get it. I just think it was not the wrong guy, but just the wrong move. I thought Georgeski, the first 35 minutes he played at right back, is the best 35 minutes he's played all season. I think he played both balls in for Jair that got the header and the early save and ready. Like, he was absolutely tearing it up down the right, and I thought the second he went to the left-hand side, we lost all his attacking threat, really. I'm not saying Hoffman didn't do well when he got in the position. It's just, yeah, I think I don't know if I would have. I don't think I would have moved Georgeski over to the left hand side. I would have looked maybe to another sub, maybe bring Katrumbas on and play him on the left hand side. I don't know. I think we lost a lot of power when Georgeski moved over to the left.
How'd you see it, Lukey?
I thought it was pretty strange. Has it been said whether Voyager was injured or whether it was just tactical or... Because I haven't watched a replay.
From what Ernie said in the post-match press conference, it sounded like it was tactical.
Okay. Obviously something needed to have changed. So Ernie's gambled and, we definitely... I don't think Voyager had a bad game, to be honest. He can cross. It's the first time we've really been seeing someone crossing from that left-hand side this season. So I was a bit unsure of it. And as Bode said, I think Georgievski in that first 35 minutes was outstanding. Those two balls he put in, if it was anyone else, really, you could probably say it's two goals. It was just unfortunate for Jair that he didn't get it on either of those occasions. But nothing against Hoff, because he was still pushing down that wing. We just didn't have the sort of dominance or mongrel down that right-hand side once Georgievski switched. And once he did switch, there was a few crosses in particular in the second half that he's just completely overhit with his left boot, that I think one's probably gone over the top and gone out for a throw into Perth on the far end. So, Ernie's got his reasons. So, it just does what he whatever happens.
Yeah, I guess it was worth the gamble, and I agree with Bodes. It was nice to see him kind of make that ballsy decision, even if it didn't pay off in the end.
Yeah, you look at other coaches we have. It was a reactive thing to do. He's tried to do something. We've had too many coaches in the past who would just sit there and do nothing until 75 minutes when the game's already gone. So at least you can say, look, yes, it didn't work this time, but at least he had a go. At least he tried something.
All right, well, let's talk about the other subs real quick, and then I'm going to back up and talk about the starting lineup because I realise I just missed that in my notes. Our other subs were Redenton came on at 67 minutes for Kane Shepherd, and we had Cowburn come on at 75 for Jair. Were they both subs too little too late? Were they legitimate strategies? What did you guys think of that?
I think it was just pure fitness. I think Kane Shepherd just can't get past 60 minutes, and it's a shame. And Jair, I think it's the same. I don't think he can complete a full 90 minutes, and it just shows a bit of our depth and what our suspension and injury form is at the moment, because we've basically brought on two central midfielders to play in attacking positions. It's just, I think it's really weird now that we're relying on a ticking time bomb in Roy O'Donovan to come back that we're relying on so heavily.
Yeah, they weren't subs to me that said we're chasing the game.
I don't think we didn't have any other options, really. Like, that's all we had. And, you could say that if we were up like we were against Brisbane last week, then, we're up and we're putting players on to see the game out, to just defend and try and see the game out. But when you're behind, putting those sort of subs don't fill you with much confidence in we're going to get a goal here, we're going to get a goal back, we're going to come back and get something out of this game. It's just... They're just not the sort of game-changing players that you need to come on and get you a result when you're 2-0 down at home.
All right, so let's back up then and go back to the starting lineup, which I should have talked about first. I think we were unchanged from the starting lineup from last week. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
Yep, cool. I didn't see last week, so... So did we think that was the right starting lineup to go in with against Perth? We've already talked about Boogs maybe being a bit outdone by Keogh, but was there anyone else who you guys think that you might have done differently in that starting 11?
No, I would have started the same 11 based on last week.
I don't think you could really change too much anyway. No one had a bad game last week out of the starting 11, so... Who would you replace him with? Maybe Hoffy to start, but it'd be a bit rough on anyone getting dropped after the performance against Brisbane.
Yep, no, I think that's a fair call. Shame it didn't work out, though, I guess. I guess we talked about it a little bit already, but I guess I want to drill down into why, what you guys think we can do differently, why it all went wrong. I mean, 22 shots or 20-odd shots on goal, or 20-odd shots, not all of them on goal, rather. About half of them in the box, about half of them out the box. We hit the post at least twice. It seemed like Georgievski and Jair couldn't keep track of where the goal mouth actually was. why? What's going on? How can we possibly be it can't all be bad luck. How can we possibly be having so many shots and not finishing any of them? What's gone wrong? What do we need to do differently? How do we fix this?
I'll take two views on it. Number one, I think it comes down to key attacking players. Like at the end of the day, last year, Nabil and O'Donovan, they made up 65% of our goals last year, and they're both one's not back till this week, and the other one no longer plays for us. And the second point I'll take is I think this is just purely with this game, and I think this is a problem not just for the Jets but for a lot of footballing teams. When teams go up 1-2-0, they stick 11 players behind the ball, and it's basically like break us down, and especially in the A-League, and it's happened to the Jets twice now in the grand final last year. We just don't know how to deal with it. I just thought Popovich set the team up absolutely perfectly. They got their lead and we just could not break them down. Don't get me wrong, there were a few times we did get in behind, and that's where you need your key attacking options to score for your goals. And unfortunately, Jair, besides the goal last week, isn't exactly high on confidence, and he didn't take the chances. So yeah, for me, I think it's a mix of both personnel and tactics.
I tend to agree. I think as well, I think I reckon there's probably people in the team who are rattled that we aren't performing as well as we did last year. And I think that's probably affecting their confidence a bit. Yes, Jair did get his goal last week, which, look, I think he played really well in the first half, in particular yesterday. He, you know, minus actually finishing it, I thought it was his best performance, and we'd seen from him in a Jets kit, and he looked hungry for it, which in other weeks he'd get the ball in the box and look to pass to someone else or turn back and pass. So I feel like there's probably a bit of, lack of confidence in some of the players there. Like Ronnie blazing the ball over about 10 metres from inside the box after Shepherd laid it off. Like, that's just... You wouldn't expect that from some of his quality. And I think once we started having shots like that happen, I think it just sort of had a flow-on effect to the rest of the team. And, you know, they were just like, oh, man, we can't score. What are we going to do? Like, we'll just try anything and nothing's happening. I think it was, a combination of Bode said and just lack of confidence.
And whatever curse is being put on us, because it's getting pretty rough. All right, well,
yeah,
that's how we saw it. We'll go now to the post-match press conference and I guess hear how Ernie saw it.
All right, fire away.
Couldn't buy a goal today, mate.
No, that's what it was like. I think in total they had one or two shots and had a penalty and a wide free kick. And we talked all week. I think the strengths of Perth are they're dangerous on set plays, corner kicks, free kicks. I didn't think they'd get a penalty, but they got a penalty kick. So two set plays hurt us. And once a team like that go two goals ahead, it's always going to be very difficult to break them down. They put numbers behind the ball, and they did their job.
You could have been in front after 12 seconds.
Yes.
A goal down, that it obviously
hurts him
mentally.
Yes, it does. I mean, we were up for it very fit. I thought Jair was in a good position. It was a good cross. Everything was going well. And then the penalty, and then the wide free kick. I thought Glenn was fouled, and his arm was knocked away, but he's got to be able to hold on to those. You know, some fall for you, some don't fall for you. It was in our hands. There was lots of opportunities for us to score goals, and we didn't score a goal. And what did we have, 22 shots or something to 4?
Can you picture why it's happening this year? Everything worked
last year.
Turned the goal last year. Was this year they saying whether it's
Well, I made a structural change in after about 30 minutes. We had a back four who were getting caught out with two players, and because our full backs were chasing wing backs and pushing forward on those, we weren't getting round behind to cover. So poor Ivan had to come off, and we played with two markers and a sweeper. And after that, we just played in their half for the rest of the game. The rest of that half and this whole of the second half, they hardly got out of their half. So it was a structural change that worked for us, and Nigel was rock solid behind Ben and Nikolai. And Daniel was getting forward really well. Jason put on as a wing back initially. He was getting forward really well, and we were causing heaps of problems, but there was no finishing at the end of it.
If you had someone like Roy O'Donovan, for instance.
Yeah. Well, you'd like to think Roy would finish some of those, but I can't blame... I mean, the boys, to their credit, worked right to the end of the game, and it was must have been frustrating for the crowd with the long, delayed goal kicks and free kicks and throw-ins. It was taking forever. That's very frustrating, and... But, you know, that's what it sometimes takes to win the game. And I think Tony Popovich is a good coach. He's top of the league. He's undefeated. So he's done a good job. I just hate it when some of their players come over and say that we're the best team they played against. They usually say that after they beat us, though.
Is it just a mental thing, then?
Absolutely. The whole game's a mental thing. You've seen us shooting at training. And sometimes you're forced to shoot from a difficult angle, which you shouldn't be, or forced to shoot from too far out. And we talked about that. But it was very hard to break them down. And the final pass became frustrating for a lot of for our players. But you can understand there's eight players in front of them, and they'd left two up. So it's very hard to get past eight players camped on the 18-yard box. I'm not criticising their coaching method. They did what they had to do, and that's why they're top of the league.
Will Roy come back to provide a lift for everyone?
I hope so. Yeah. That's the plan. That's the plan.
Do you look at him to start straight away? Are you throwing back?
His distances that he's covering in training and in intra-club games, the distances he's covered in high-intensity areas, 20 kilometres above, are breaking records at the club. Believe me, he's lost weight, he's super fit, he's very highly motivated to come back, so he's probably coming back at the right time.
The referees covered up respect over their arms this week?
I feel, despite the game today and the loss, I really feel sorry for the referees, because they really have been thrown under the bus. And the situation with coaches is there's nothing transparent about coaches being sanctioned. If a player is sanctioned, everyone knows who, the three on the tribunal he's facing. They know what the charge is. They know the three on the appeals board, and it's all explained, and it's all open, transparent process. When it comes to a coach, the coach gets, please explain, and then usually a fine. Last fine I got, I've only had two in 11 seasons, was February last year against the Wanderers. We had a goal chalked off with Jason and a penalty given against us for Tupper Stanley, which was later deemed to be a big mistake. I said that was a disgraceful performance by the referee. I got a $1,500 fine. Now it's all been kept quiet. Apparently the coaches' union, which I'm not a part of, is involved. And all of a sudden, there's no fine. So there must be a new standard that's been set now. So obviously, my fine will be refunded this week. So I started on Friday phoning the FFA to find out about my fine being refunded. And the first person I called said, oh, it's nothing to do with me. The second person said it was nothing to do with me. And the third person I called, she says, oh, I'll get back to you. Never did. She says, Greg O'Rourke will give you a call. So I'm still waiting on that call. No, he didn't say he'd give me a call. He said he'd phone the CEO. So for the coaches, there's got to be something open and transparent. But a coach has walked away scot-free. Just about every other coach, Coors last year, Marcos, he got a fair fine as well. I think Graham Arnold has the record for fines. And all of a sudden, it's not explained why. It's no transparent process, no named people. I can't seem to find anyone that makes a decision for coaches. So I think the coaches, the referee, are doing it tough. There's a players' union, there's now a coaches' union. I think the referee should get a union together, because there's something wrong there. There's something very wrong. We all have our moments with the referees, but I don't think they do such a bad job.
What did you make of the penalty against Glenn?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think the biggest mistake was for Glenn, that his leg was up. So maybe if his leg was down, it wouldn't have been a penalty. I'm not sure. But you get some, you lose some. I can't complain about the standard of the referee.
Thank you. Thanks,
was that enough about the coaches? Did I get the message? Am I getting a refund? I should get 10 months interest as well. Do you think I've got any chance?
thank you again to Fox Sports for letting us play the post-match press conference there. So in the press conference, they did mention Roy coming back next week and that maybe Roy would have finished some of those chances. We've already mentioned Roy coming back next week, but let's go into a little bit deeper. Is he going to score next week? Is he going to make the difference? Will he start? What do you guys see happening there?
I think one of two things will happen. I think he will either score another double or a hat-trick, or he'll be sent off in the first 20 minutes. There is no in-between.
But both would be awesome, actually.
Look, yes. It would. But I think he'll start. Nothing against Shepherd, but I think Shepherd will probably drop to the bench for Roy and probably come on around 50, 60 minutes, depending on how we're going. And I just have the feeling that Roy is either going to come out blazing and score within the first 5 minutes, or he's going to be over-enthusiastic and get another red. That's how I see it.
Right.
Yeah, he'll start. I've got no doubt about it. Ernie would just be like, he'll be the happiest man at training this week knowing he has his striker back. But I'm going to say this. How do you guys feel about like the Jets with like that picture they used this morning, like basically portraying like Roy O'Donovan as the Terminator, I guess. And I guess playing like it came across to me as like he is the bad man. Like what did you guys think of that?
I didn't really take too much out of it. I just saw it as he's back finally. Cool. Okay.
Look, I really like the marketing guys, so I don't really want to say what I think of it.
Come on, Emma. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I think that says it all. Read between the lines there, Bodes.
Come on. We need content. We need the direct.
No, they've been too good to me. So they've been too good to me. I couldn't possibly. What do you think of it, Bodie?
Oh, look, I think it's different. I don't think anyone in the A-League has really like played like, I guess, the evil card, so it's interesting in that regard, but yeah, it's I don't know. It's a bit
you wouldn't
weird.
Say Berisha played the evil card?
Sorry?
You wouldn't say Berisha played the evil card? Was he not famous for being an asshole?
It's not like Melbourne Victory ever like come out saying like we've got this evil player in Besar Berisha. It was more like we've got this goal scoring machine where the Jets like basically this morning minor like yeah, Roy O'Donovan's not a head case. I think I used the words ticking time bomb. He's a time bomb.
I think for me the weirder thing was the A-League accounts reposting it and saying Jetstar back. Yeah, he is back because he was banned from you guys. Remember?
Yeah.
Remember, this is your thing. I thought that was very weird, and that sort of left me like, really? He could have just done nothing, hey?
I guess they're excited about the potential controversy of him coming back, though.
Yeah, but they've got a Melbourne derby to worry about. They don't need to worry about our little derby or our little game on Sunday.
I hope it's not a little game on Sunday. I hope it's a big game on Sunday.
Mm. Oh, so do I.
But that is the job of the preview pod, so we won't tread on their toes because someone else will be talking about that later in the week. But just give me your bottom line. Will Roy save us or are we screwed?
I think it's a lot to ask of him to come back and be our saviour first week, like first game. I don't think he'll be our saviour straight up. I also don't think he'll probably make too much of a difference. Yes, you know, if we're getting the balls into him like we have been earlier in the season where people maybe haven't finished the chance. I think he's more likely to, but he's not going to lead us to a top two finish just by himself.
It'd be a great redemption story, though, wouldn't it, if he came back and scored the first goal next week?
Oh, I'd love it.
Because he owes us a few, let's be fair.
It would be better than when he scored in the first 10 minutes against them last year. It would be a comeback story, okay. A good one.
Well, let's hope it is a comeback story and not another disappointment, because I'm not sure Luke or I could handle that. There's
no,
a few more things.
No more.
There's a few more things I want to talk about before we leave this game alone. The time wasting. The time wasting.
You would get to it.
Who wants to take that?
Luke seems primed.
This isn't the first time Perth has done this this season, and I made the exact same comment on an earlier game. I think it may have been against Melbourne Victory. If a player is time-wasting in the ninth minute of the game and you don't give him a card until the 54th minute of the game, you're not doing your job. He's been doing it for 40 minutes, and in that time, he's been telling Reddy to hurry up. He's been giving him the arm movement, come on, hurry up. He's gone over and talked to Andy Keogh, the captain, said, come on, you've got to get your boys sorted, get them moving on and everything. If you card him when he does it, if he starts in the ninth minute and you give him a warning and he continues to do it by, say, the 16th minute or, you know, a couple of times after, card him. It will stop. If it doesn't stop, card it again. You wouldn't have this problem of where the entire first half was, you know, we have a shot, it goes out for a goal kick. Time waste. You wouldn't have that.
I'm trying to decide whether you putting in your dad voice means you're going to be the most awesome dad ever or the worst dad ever.
Look, I don't know. I don't know. Time will tell.
But like, you definitely sound like an annoyed parent. Like, I've told you once, I've told you again. Why isn't this changing?
It is not the first time it's happened this season with Perth. If they get onto it straight away, then it doesn't explode into what it did later on, where you've got the crowd booing, where you've got players going up to the referee telling him there's time wasting. Just card him. They will stop. If they don't stop, then card him again. They will learn. It's one of the easiest things in the rule. Time wasting, unsporting behaviour. Get onto it early and people will stop. If you don't get onto it early, they're just going to keep doing it and it's just going to blow up way worse than it was ever supposed to.
Look, I just want to ask, have you been drinking?
I have not, and I didn't yesterday either.
I think maybe you need to.
Exact same thing.
I think you need one, Lukey.
Look, before the derby this weekend, I have a work Christmas party before, so I think there'll be a few brewskis happen this weekend. And look, we may even get in even better form than now. Who knows?
I feel like you need them, mate. Well, last Mariners game, every time we went to get beer, they scored. So the more beer, the more scoring is what I'm going for. So at least then it will be fun. Bodes, do you have any further thoughts on the time wasting, or was Luke's comments on the time wasting enough?
Luke pretty well nailed it. The refs now, they've just got to get tougher and card earlier. That's basically the simplicity of it.
All right. My next question is a little bit less footballing and a little bit more observational. Perth, they were winning, yet they were so angry. I have never seen a winning team players being such dicks to each other. Like, they were being horrible to each other as a team throughout the game. Why are they so angry? Is it a good thing? Is it working for them? Or is it just a weird anomaly? Because our boys, we weren't doing that well, but they were still being very supportive of each other. Every missed chance, someone, you know, gave another one a clap, and, you know, the guy who had the good cross didn't lament at the guy who actually missed the shot. So we kept it together as a team, I felt, despite the fact that we weren't getting the goals. But Perth were just constantly being jerks to each other. Did anyone else notice that, or is that just a me thing?
Sorry, Bodes, you go.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it just sounds like a Tony Popovich thing, that he's just got his players super riled up and they're just all competitive. It represents Tony Popovich perfectly.
Probably a good point.
I was just going to, sorry.
Go, Lukey.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I think I picked up on it once in maybe the second half, possibly Franić and someone else, and I thought it was very strange. But I didn't think of anything else of it, sorry.
Yeah, no, I sit quite close to the field, and just listening to the way they spoke to each other, I was like, there's no need for it. You're well up, you're well in front, even right into, you know, the 87th minute. It struck me as kind of strange. But now that Bodie's mentioned Popovich, that actually kind of does make sense. Right, well, do you guys have anything else to mention about the match, or shall I end on some less frustrating points? Have I missed anything?
I'm happy to move on from it. Yeah, rid it from my memory.
I think we all want to move on from it. Well, one of the happy points, I think, the weather was atrocious. People were talking about it possibly getting called off because of the rain and the lightning and the hail. I know a couple of pod members couldn't come because of the storm. A couple were late because of the storm. But 6,701 people showed up to watch the Jets in the rain, and this week we did pass our record for membership. So I think 6,000, you know, on paper 6,700 doesn't look great, but in the context of the weather, I think that was phenomenal. So I'm going to say congratulations to every single one of those 6,000 and something people who showed up, because I think that is brilliant.
It was. I agree. You know, you look at that and you sort of say, okay, well, this club has over 11,000 members. Why do they only have 6,500? Well, you know, that weather was atrocious. I was walking over to the field probably half an hour, if that, before kickoff, and it was pouring and there was thunder everywhere. And I wouldn't have been surprised if anyone that had been walking around me had just gone nah and then turned around, because. You know, you sort of, as you said, there was a point there where you're like, is this game going to get played? Like, is it going to get called off, or what's going to happen? And it was good for the game. Like, there was wind, but the rain held off. There was no real lightning, or there was a bit of thunder in the distance. But for the game, from kickoff, it was fine.
I think the lightning might have been behind your stand. I could see a lot of lightning from where I was sitting and was kind of hoping for mercy from the lightning gods at one stage. But, it did hold off. And the rain did hold off as well. We only got a few sprinkles during the match in the end. But still, in the lead-up, and with the weather we've had lately, thinking that it would be, you know, like the storm we had the night before, I think it was really well done for people to turn out. Did anyone watch our girls play Perth this week?
I didn't, but I've tried to catch up on it.
So the girls at least did take 1 point away, a 2-2 draw with Perth. They did take out the goddess, who is Sam Kerr, though, which was pretty hectic and was a pen against us. Brave is the girl who smashes Sam Kerr, I think. But, yeah, that was a great game. There were a lot of good shots and good saves in that game, and I won't go through it point by point, but the girls are a pleasure to watch at the moment, and I'm looking forward to more goodness from them. Does anyone else want to add anything on the girls?
I sadly didn't see it.
It was a better game than the men's. You really should have watched it.
That's an absolute hell of a result to get over in Perth. To be playing for 60-odd minutes with 10 players and to restrict Perth with Sam Kerr, Rachel Hill and the rest of the team, who currently undefeated, to they didn't score again after that, after the pen. So to hold them out for 60-odd minutes with a player down is phenomenal. It did suck about Taylor Smith. I hope she got injured in, I think, the 81st minute or something, and has had scans on her knee, so hopefully it's nothing too serious, because I think she's been one of our best, if not the best player for us this year. And she's been a pleasure to watch, so hopefully it's nothing serious and we see her back out soon. I think you've probably got the stats there, Emma, but are we seventh now?
For A-League or the W-League?
For W-League.
I don't actually have the W-League in front of me. We definitely are in the A-League.
That's okay.
Seventh forever. Yeah. You talk. I'll look it up.
I have a feeling that they're seventh possibly, but the competition at the moment in the W-League is super tight, that Perth, who are undefeated, are only 3 points ahead of us.
Should have backed yourself, Lukey. So. We are seventh. Yep, you are absolutely correct. So we're seventh in both leagues at the moment, which I guess I like that symmetry.
Until you see that one's 10 and one's 9.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, you know, obviously there's been results that we've let slip this season that we shouldn't have. We should have at least got something out of the game against Brisbane the other week when we lost 1-0. And it's just stuff like that, you know. Had we picked up the odd point here or there, if we hadn't conceded silly goals here and there, how much higher up the ladder would we be? Would we be above Perth? Would we be clear in second, given how compact everyone is. As I said, there's 3 points separating second from seventh. So you sort of think, oh, you know, if we don't drop points to Brisbane, we don't drop points to Victory, even though they're leading, or we don't play terribly for the most part against Melbourne City, you know, we could be well clear in the top four.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. It's a very compact table and could change at any time. And I also agree with you that I hope Taylor is okay because, yeah, she's been a pleasure to watch this year. Yeah, well said, Lukey. All right, well, let's not talk about the games anymore. Let's move on to the tipping competition and update everyone how the Jetstream tipping competition is going. Unfortunately, I'm not winning anymore. Joel Goodsir is a freak and has had some very good rounds of late. Also, I forgot to put my tips in 1 week while I was in Japan, unfortunately. So Joel Goodsir is leading. He is well out in front. Grant Black is coming second. I'm not sure if that's the real Grant Black account or his AI account, so we'll see. And then I'm coming third.
I think the AI one is the one with the hyphen.
Right. Well, then the real Grant Black is coming second. So well done, Grant. We are having a much more exciting challenge for the wooden spoon in our Jetstream tipping. there's about a point in it between Dave and Anthony, and then maybe another point to you, Luke. That's going to be an exciting battle for the bottom.
I think I've improved. I got the most tips last week. So I've improved.
Well, you must have been doing poorly before this then.
I was doing about as good as Dave was.
Right, well.
Can we at least talk about the fantasy league?
Are you doing well at that, are you both?
But I am in the A-League fantasy, and I'm just looking at it now. I'm coming first. So, yeah, we just take a moment to.
I thought you might have been coming first since you wanted to talk about it. Do you know where anyone else is coming or just you?
Sorry?
Do you know where anyone else is coming? Can you fill us in more on the league or is it just you?
I can fill us in. I'm beating the director of stats by 3 points and then, oh, Luke, in third place, 13 points behind me.
Right, I've so I'm sucking at fantasy. So is it one way or the other? Can you either tip or can you fantasy? Is there anyone who's doing well in both?
I've chosen to put all my efforts towards the fantasy side of things. I think I'm also winning the Jetstream Premier League fantasy as well. Just hang on. Yeah, I'm coming first in the Jetstream fantasy Premier League as well. I'm actually quite stoked with this.
Right. I wonder what this says about a person when you're better at fantasy than real life.
That's a bit sad, isn't it?
Oh, I think there might be some interesting character traits there. But, yeah, well, well done, Bodes. I gave up on the A-League fantasy about 2 weeks in when I got sick of clicking 4 buttons to do one thing. I'm still trying at the Premier League fantasy because that interface is much nicer, but apparently I just suck at that. So, yeah, hopefully everyone else who is playing is enjoying it and not too sad that Bodhi is whooping everyone's butt.
Bodes is winning 2 competitions.
Yeah, I know, hey.
I love how you sound surprised that I'm not coming last.
Well, considering you haven't used it since the second week, that's pretty impressive.
I'm just looking ahead to next week's fixtures in the head-to-head A-League fantasy, and it's Jetapool FC from Dave Keating, Director of Stats, up against Roy O'Donovan School of Karate. I think that will be a battle for the ages.
Who owns Roy O'Donovan School of Karate? Is that you or is that Joel?
That's me.
Oh, right. Excellent. Well, I look forward to hearing next week who wins that.
Yeah.
Jetstream exclusive. We have all the good content here, ladies and gentlemen. one last thing before we go. Andy Naboot was in the house for this game. Unfortunately, not on the field. Unfortunately, just watching the match. It's nice to have him back in town. That gave me the warm and fuzzies. It's nice that he's back to train with us, even though he's not going to be able to play with us. Beginning of the Perth match, my friend Linda, Cursed Linda, you've all heard of her, picks favourite players, they leave the club. Cursed Linda said, wouldn't it be great if we could get in a Hollywood makeup artist who could do the prosthetic and make Andy Naboot look like one of our other players so that he could play for us? Start of the game, I was like, ha, 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 so funny, Linda. By the end of the game, I was like, actually, Linda, could we make that happen? Could we make some calls? So, yeah, really, really made me miss Andy that game. His drive in the finishing and the way him and Dimi work so well together would have been very nice. But obviously we can't keep lamenting over that because
he would have scored one of those two Jaya chances.
More. Yeah, and he actually, his team played and won their cup final while I was in Japan as well. A little bit too far for me to go, unfortunately. But, yeah, nice to have him back in town. That's lovely. Right, have I missed anything news-wise, team-wise, game-wise, boys?
Don't think so.
All right, Pete, you can edit that part out then. Thanks.
Actually, I do.
Damn it, Luke.
I was going to say this. I got caught up looking at Fantasy League. Actually, it'll probably be covered in the preview, but it was announced today that because they have the bye next week, the Jets W League team will be traveling to the Gold Coast this weekend to play two friendly games against the Chinese national team.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's good that we're able to get the get these sort of games. You know, the Chinese national team, they're good. Like they're not pushovers or anything. So to be able to get that for our club is, I think that's fantastic. And it just goes to show the probably the influence that it is having Martin Lee on board.
And it's a good use of the bye as well. Like I hate byes, the way they kind of disrupt the momentum. I guess, you know, when we've got injuries, a bye is nice to give us more time to get back. But in general, byes in a comp are not a good vibe for me, but seeing them do something so useful to get so much experience and exposure for our girls, I think is a really great way to use that downtime. So, yeah, well done to the club for that. Phenomenal. Right, last chance. Everything's covered. Okay. All that remains for me to say then is please do remember that the Jetstream is a media empire, even though we didn't make videos this week due to the rain and all the other happenings, but we are on the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Obviously if you're listening to the podcast, you know you can find us in all those places that podcasts are found. The boys list them, but I don't remember them because I always just go to newcastlefootball.net when I want to listen and download it straight from there because I'm too unco for podcasting apps. Yeah, so can someone make a Simpsons joke or say go the Jets to let me wrap this thing up, please?
Go Jokers.
Yeah, go the Jets. Vamos al Jokers.
Right, go the Jets. Worst ending ever.
Bring on many beers at Gosford Hotel on Saturday. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!